Welcome to this Frequency Matters podcast. I'm Pat Hindle, and I'm here with my co-host, Gary LaRude. Today, we are exploring how engineering ambitious can be scary but rewarding with the development of kilowatt GaN transistors. To discuss this with us, we have David Hall, Go-to-Market Director and Head of Semiconductor Marketing at NI, and Sam Kim, Vice President and General Manager at RFHIC. Welcome, David and Sam.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Pat. Thanks, Gary.
So how did this ambitious project of GaN on diamond start?
So we started to invest in GaN technology in general since 2004. As we are fabless, we're not biased in any technology. So we're looking for the best technology for our customers. And we saw the potential of GaN in general back in 2004. And then we started investing in GaN on silicon carbide, and we took the calculated risk to commercialize the technology for 4G telecom. But then we realized that there is a bottleneck for this GaN, which is the substrate material. So we decided to invest in IP of GaN on diamond in 2016 to unleash the full potential of GaN. So that's how we started working on GaN on diamond way back in 2016. And then in 2019, during IMS, we showcased GaN on diamond that has 100% more power density than GaN on silicon carbide.
So talk a little bit more about GaN on diamond technology and some of the advantages it has compared to what we're more familiar with, as you mentioned, the GaN on silicon carbide.
Yes, GaN on silicon carbide is the technology that is widely used nowadays. And as you know, the thermal conductivity of silicon carbide is very similar to copper, about 350 to 400. But compared to diamond, it's very inferior. Diamonds, depending on the density of the diamond, can be anywhere from 1500 to 2200 milli-K. So it's about 4 to 5 times higher than silicon carbide. So from the substrate material-wise, there is a much better thermal conductivity. And that's one big difference between the diamond substrate and silicon carbide. But also for our own process, when we make the GaN on diamond process, we eliminate the buffer layer between the GaN and the substrate. And that is the one is causing the trapping effect, the memory effect for GaN, whether it's GaN on silicon or GaN on silicon carbide. By eliminating this buffer layer, we are eliminating the trapping effect, thus improving the linearity. So there is a power density, and also the linear aspect of GaN on diamond.
So what are the benefits of this technology, and how does the cost compare to traditional GaN?
So in terms of advantage, obviously you can get more power compared to GaN on silicon carbide. Our hope is to get 3 times more. We demonstrated 2 times more last year. So our customers, end users, they can make the system much smaller. And by making the system smaller, that means they can reduce the operating cost. If you look at the base station industry, you charge it per the volume, per the weight when you install base station. So The smaller you make, less weight, that means the operating cost is lower. And of course, there is a benefit of higher efficiency using GaN on diamond. So that also reduces the operating cost for the carriers. And we also talked about the linearity. So better linearity, you can trade off the linearity with the high efficiency or high power. So that's a benefit. So it all sounds really good. So that's why you asked the question about the cost.
Yes.
So, you know, when the GaN on diamond, GaN on silicon carbide came, it was very expensive compared to bipolar or LDMOS, other technology. But price has come down. That's the natural progression of semiconductors. So we believe GaN on diamond, in terms of the dollar per watt, should be very comparable to GaN on silicon carbide when the technology matures.
So tying to our theme of ambition being scary, what were the challenges to being first to market with GaN on diamond, and which were most scary?
Oh, The scary part was the unknown factor. That's what we call it internally. When we commercialize GaN on silicon carbide, of course, there are a lot of unknowns and there are a lot of challenges, but it was very different from GaN on silicon carbide to the GaN on diamond, because for GaN on silicon carbide, we had various foundry partners who had a proven technology for GaN on silicon carbide. They had process proven to produce hemp device using GaN on silicon carbide epistructure. But for GaN on diamond, nobody has done it before. We're the first company trying to make 4-inch wafer GaN on diamond hemp device. So we had to work together with our partners from the scratch. So as a first-time mover, we just had to figure out everything together from the beginning.
So can you tell us how this collaboration between NI and RFHIC started and what you guys went through?
Yeah, so a lot of that started really back when RFHIC started to ramp the volume production test of some of their base station PA business. So as they were seeing some of the volume increase, they approached us about ways to potentially reduce the cost of manufacturing tests for some of their sub-6 gigahertz power amplifiers. And at the time, they were using a more traditional, you know, rack and stack type approach to test instruments. And they were looking to increase throughput and reduce test time and test costs. So we started down an approach where we ultimately used PXI in order to increase the test throughput and then increase the test capacity, the manufacturing capacity of some of the base station PAs.
So how does the test system for GaN on diamond fit into this project?
Yeah, so I think that one really comes into play at the point when you're looking at mass production. So Sam, I'll let you comment on kind of where you are in that phase. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the intercept with RFHIC has really been in the manufacturing facility. So at the point when RFHIC really looks to do mass production, I think that's the point where the collaboration really heats up.
Yes. The benefit of NI system is the scalability, and it's a modular approach. So I don't think that it's going to be a big change from GaN on silicon carbide to GaN on diamond in terms of mass production for RFHIC. So I believe that we can utilize the current system for our GaN on diamond production when it becomes ready.
So how does this type of system help in the production of the devices?
Oh, definitely there's been a great benefit using NI system. It was able to reduce the cost in terms of the overhead and overtime from our production team. And also we're able to improve the total capacity by 2 times by reducing the overall, the setup time and then also the tech time.
Yeah, and I'll add to what Sam said. I think one of the things that we see as a pretty consistent challenge in this industry is wanting to, you know, test the device across a broad enough specifications that you can guarantee the specification to your customer. So, for example, obviously it's in RFHIC's best interest if you can do a measurement like EVM or ACP in production test, because then you can offer that as a guaranteed specification to your customer. So one of the benefits of being able to test it faster or with higher throughput is that you can many times increase the test coverage in production without actually increasing the test cost.
Good point. So if you take a step back and look at that transition that you made to try to get more capacity from a test standpoint, what advantages did you see in a modular test system compared to other approaches? And how difficult was it to move from your prior approach to implementing modular test?
Let me answer the second question first. It's a human nature. Whenever you try something new, there's a hesitation, especially we are using the homegrown technology. And using the technology from outside, there was a little bit of hesitance from our engineering. But as soon as we are able to show the benefit, and they were all on board, and we received a great buy-in. So it wasn't a great challenge from in terms of acceptance from our engineers. And the modular approach is very useful for our own production because the demand from the telecom can fluctuate dramatically from one quarter to another quarter. So we are able to scale our production need based on our customers' demand.
So what were the results of the testing transition and why was that so important?
Oh, as I mentioned before, we are able to increase the capacity by more than 2 times. And we were able to eliminate the overtime that we had to pay unnecessarily. And so in terms of capacity increase and the cost reduction, these are two areas that we're able to benefit from using the modular approach from NI.
Were there any scary times in testing something with that kind of power density or that high level of power?
Yes. Even for transistors, that's 10 millimeter by 10 millimeter can generate more than 200 watt power. So, but as we have done this so many years, initially when we're using GaN on silicon carbide for the first time, it was a little bit scary. Just like any other technology, you get used to it and you learn how to adapt and you develop very safe the system environment. So it's not as scary anymore.
I think in addition to what Sam said, I think there's also a fear associated with completely changing your approach to manufacturing too, which I don't want to underestimate, because when you think about the complexity of a production test setup, if you can kind of visualize what the RFHSE tests for, you have a pick and place handler picking up parts. There's some robotics involved. When you get to the test fixture, there's a driver amp that obviously has to amplify the signal to the appropriate level because it's a base station PA. There's a bunch of attenuation and couplers on the receive side to make sure that you're conditioning the signal to what's appropriate for a vector signal analyzer. And then there's a significant amount of software development required to actually automate the instruments to do the measurements. And so you can kind of imagine pre-NI, all of this was working and perfectly functional before. And so there's a tremendous business risk in order to re-architect that relatively complex system in order to achieve some potential future benefit. So I think there's an ambitious element as well with the RFHIC team as they undertook kind of a pretty significant task to re-architect that to achieve some higher throughput results.
I think it's just nature of our RFHIC. We are not scared of trying something new. We jumped from LDMOS to gallium silicon and then to gallium silicon carbide. Now again on diamond and trying new approach from NI to improve our productions.
So are there any future improvements or things down the road that you guys have planned already?
Oh, again on diamond is definitely one of them. And our CTO is also talking about GaN on GaN as our next step. And also there is a diamond. But, you know, before we move into the next step, we like to make sure that we mature this GaN on diamond technology and able to present this solution to our customers' benefit.
So I'd like to loop back to a comment you made, David, about the transition, and certainly going from the homegrown system into the modular system, there's a lot of hardware involved, but can either or both of you comment about the software transition?
Yeah, so the core kind of aspect or elements of a test system is really some of the driver software for some of the instrumentation, right? So you have a pretty significant number of test cases, which boil down to, you know, software to control the instruments, set them up in various, you know, generation settings, DC settings, measurement parameters. One of the hardest parts of that we see many engineers take a significant amount of time is often the measurement correlation part. And that gets back to Sam's point earlier about sort of the fear factor is when you transition from one test system to another, you have to make sure that your measurement results match at every single instance. And when they don't, it's explainable so that you know it's not a problem with your measurement settings. So in addition to just sort of recreating what you've already created, you know, with one set of equipment, with one set of measurement drivers, you also have to run a set of regression testing with the new instrumentation and then compare all of the data and measurement results to make sure that those match up appropriately.
And another thing is that for RF and microwave application, there's so many different products. So that means you gotta do the regression. You have to do the correlation on many different samples. So it's not a trivial test. We receive a lot of help from MI to accomplish this.
Well, it sounds like quite an accomplishment. So Sam and David, thank you for telling us about the development of the GaN transistors and the test migration. This is a really interesting project showing how engineers can push technology to new levels and how engineering ambition is often scary. So thank you both for giving us a view into the work that you've been doing and your collaboration and its impact in the market.